You're listening to EPN, the ePodcast Network.
This is Enterprise Radio and your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, your EPN channel for exclusive interviews with entrepreneurs, small business owners, and top executives who have experienced great success, as well as the sharing of their latest creations, products, and or services that can help you build your business. Leading to business success. Today, we are speaking with Jim Mascara, a principal at Sentinel Consulting, a business restructuring and capital acquisition firm catering to small and mid-sized business. Jim is also the author of the book, Escaping Oz, Navigating the Crisis, and is here today to discuss the current status of the economy. Jim, certainly a privilege to have you with us today on Enterprise Radio.
Good morning, Eric. Thanks for having me on.
And good morning to you as well, and nice to speak with you for a moment today. So your book looks like it would be an interesting read. Why is it important for people to read this book?
You know, in 2008, the economy experienced, what is termed today as a financial crisis. For many people, the measuring stick of that was an economic contraction that was not quite as big as the one for the Great Depression, but certainly very meaningful. I mean, obviously had a lot of political implications and so forth. But there's a lot of information that gets divulged and disseminated in the news media outlets, and I don't think a lot of people really understand when they hear some of these terms what they mean. And you know, it's kind of like if you learned algebra in your academic past. Well, before you had algebra, you needed to have some basic fundamentals about math, and I don't think a lot of people really have that. So whenever they hear pronouncements by political leaders or business leaders about some things that need to be done, you know, I don't believe that people really have an understanding of the context of some of those points. And so really the early part of the book is spent discussing some of the fundamentals, the origins of some of our problems. And for, let's just take an average person, regardless of their station in life, they may or may not have some investments. Obviously they're employed, or they may be looking forward to retirement or their kids' college education. All those things will require some sort of money. And we're coming to a very, very critical point in the investment climate right now where I think you're going to probably see some fairly significant changes. When I wrote my first book 4 years ago, I started talking about a topic called deflation, and nobody had really heard about that. If you do Google searches now on deflation, you'll see it's a much more prevalent search term. So the financial security, I guess, of an individual is very, very important. And, the theme of the book is Escaping Oz, and that was the theme of the first book. And I really feel that people need to have a firm understanding of the financial topics right now and economics so they can help themselves, because if they're going to look for like what I call the wizards to help them, they may be sorely lacking and probably disappointed.
What is the greatest problem facing our economy today?
Well, it's really, Eric, a four-letter word, and it's debt, D-E-B-T. The origins of our problem really come back to our money unit and what we consider money and how we use credit. And the flip side of credit is debt. Debt is something that, if you think about what debt really means, it's consumption that you're moving forward in time. So let's say that you had something that you really wanted to buy. You could accumulate the savings for it, 100% of it, maybe 50%, 75%. And at that point in time, you know, you've deferred consumption, and you have the funds to acquire whatever that is. But over the course of time, again, because of our money unit and the way we use credit, we've accelerated consumption forward. And so the only way to do that is to create credit and then the corresponding part of that, which is debt. Debt has to be repaid at some point. And if it's not repaid, then you enter into something called default, possibly restructuring. Those things are very deflationary. They have very adverse effects for the economy. The other thing about debt is, of course, it's hard for an economy to grow if it constantly has an overhang of debt, because if you brought a bunch of consumption forward in time, that means that you've got to finance it later. You've got to have your working income to try to pay back that debt. There's two facets of debt that I talk about in the book, and one is it's called self-liquidating and non-self-liquidating debt. So let's say that you have some sort of a loan that you want to acquire because you want to build something, and whatever it is that you're building is going to help you pay back that debt in the future. So it may be some sort of a business loan for productive purposes. The other aspect of it is what I was talking about earlier. You have debt that you acquire because you want to bring some consumption forward. Well, that debt that you're acquiring isn't really going to help you pay off that debt. So I'll just pick on, let's say, a big screen TV or a vacation. So if you take some take a loan out for that particular purpose, you've consumed something, but the purpose of that loan wasn't to help create some income for you in the future to help pay back that loan. We've probably gotten very, very imbalanced over the course of the last few years, possibly even longer than that, in terms of the type of debt that's been created. More recently, you've had government and central banks, what I call the wizards, stepping in to try to ameliorate some of the effects of the financial crisis. But what have they done in respect? They've created yet more debt. So you don't solve debt problems by creating more debt. And so the overhang of debt right now is so great in the public coffers that it's affecting us today. It's certainly going to affect us in the future. And as I have one chapter in the book dedicated to retirement plans, that there's a lot of people right now that are very dependent on some future retirement stream of income from state governments, municipalities, and so forth, but they are just being crushed right now under the weight of their own debt, that it's going to be almost impossible, if not impossible, for them to satisfy these unfulfilled obligations in the future.
If you would, discuss how your book, Escaping Oz, Navigating the Crisis, is structured for the reader.
Yeah, I basically got it into three parts. Part one is called The Journey, and in The Journey, I talk about, well, what's the origin of our problem, and I start out with something called a root cause analysis. So whenever you try to figure out a problem, you try to figure out, let's go back in time and try to assess what the actual root cause is. And a lot of that is related to how our money unit developed over time. And that's kind of getting back to the first question you asked me, which is why is it important to read the book? Because I don't think people have a good understanding of, let's say, monetary history. And so to kind of understand where we are present and where we're going to head in the future, you kind of need to understand our past. You know, history can and certainly be our guide. The second part of the journey is some topics called inflation, which I think a lot of people are familiar with that concept generally. Deflation, which, again, probably something that a lot of people certainly hadn't heard about a few years ago. You're hearing more about that now. Understanding a cycle. Cycles is really important to understand because I think people think of time or events occurring linearly. And I just try to reintroduce the fact that things can occur in a very cyclical fashion, particularly in the markets. I also talk about human behavior in terms of generational analysis. We've heard discussions about the baby boom generation, Generation X, which I'm a part of, and then the millennials and so forth. But it's also important to understand what some of the hopes, dreams, and aspirations are of those generations, and what you can actually do, referring back to the cycle analysis I mentioned earlier. You can go back in time historically and look at similar generational patterns that occurred for, let's say, the boomers of four generations prior, or Generation X and so forth. And there's some research that I did from a book called The Fifth Turning that talked very, very in-depth about generations and how they behave and really how they impact economies as a whole. Bubbles and manias. We've had some very, very significant financial manias that have occurred in the past. I reference those as well. The second part of the book is called The Crisis. How did we get into the crisis? You know, what did the government do to respond to the crisis? I dedicate a chapter in this book to what I call the Supreme Wizard, which is the Federal Reserve, and then I spend some time talking about our economy. The last part of the book is called Preparing Our Escape, and part of that's understanding investor psychology. You know, we recently had the death of Leonard Nimoy, and he was Mr. Spock on the Star Trek series, and he was a Vulcan. When Vulcan, if you remember, they're very logical beings, and that's how they make their decisions. And I think a lot of the classical finance models were patterned after the assumption that all humans, all investors behave like Mr. Spock, but the reality is quite different, so I talk about that. And then I cover some general categories like banks, real estate, stocks, bonds, retirement accounts, precious metals, the U.S. dollar, and what sort of effects are going to be felt in those investment categories in the future as a result of things that have occurred in the past.
Certainly need to pick up that book. Today we're joined by Jim Mosquera, a principal at Sentinel Consulting, a business restructuring and capital acquisition firm catering to small and mid-sized businesses, here on Enterprise Radio, a part of the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Jim, what is the most important thing about a market?
You know, we have something today called the Internet, which is an interconnected network made up of many nodes. It's worldwide. Obviously, in some countries, it's a little more throttled than others. And in a human brain, you have a lot of interconnectedness as well. The one thing about a market is it's consider it kind of like an Internet, if you will. You have a lot of different participants in it. And in my book, I talk about some economic and investment laws. And it's important to understand that a market needs to have that interconnectedness, because that's how the intelligence of the market is developed. And again, it's not that there's one particular person that has supreme knowledge of the market, but it's that collective, that interconnectedness, which again kind of disseminates some of that information. And that information is reflected in what we call supply and demand, and then the corresponding effect of that, which is prices. My economic law, and I call it economic law number 4, which is markets allow people to satisfy themselves by satisfying others. And, you know, economies are really expressions, or markets, if you will, of what people do. You know, participants in the economy, if you think about it, you're acting on your own behalf, so what's best for you, but you have to do that in a manner that meets the satisfaction of others acting on their own behalf. So the collective action of all of these participants is what I call the market. And so if you think about what a market is, it's people acting on their own behalf for the benefit of others. What we have right now is you've got some intervention by outside forces. Again, I refer to them as the wizards, that are attempting to guide is probably not the right word, but to feel that they have some knowledge about the market and about how things need to progress in the market. In the United States, we used to chide these planned economies in the Soviet Union and other Eastern Bloc countries because the government decided how much of this was produced, that was produced, and so forth. There were prices that were set. And it's very, very difficult, if not impossible, for an authority to understand, you know, what prices need to be, what supply needs to be, demand needs to be, and so forth. That's really the responsibility of the market. So I think that's really, when you talk about what's the most important thing about a market, is let the market operate, because the market is truly what has the knowledge of what prices, supply, and demand need to be.
The book is not solely about economic and financial topics, and you have a chapter on the government. Tell us more about that chapter, if you would.
Well, it's interesting because an underlying theme of the book is I say that politics, and I said this in my first book 2-4 years ago, politics and economics are certainly going to intersect, have intersected actually, and will certainly intersect much more in the future. And what I mean by that is when this country was founded, and this is part of what I talked about in the latest book, is everything was based on life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And our early government evolved with those principles in mind. I think what has happened over time is we've asked government, and I say we, the collective, all of us in this country, have asked government to do more. When government does more, it costs more to do government. And I think that there needs to be a reflection of, you know, what we want government to do, and then more importantly, are we willing to pay for government to do that? You know, recently we've had a very contentious discussion about government expansion into healthcare with the Affordable Care Act. And I even heard this morning that there's going to be some discussion in the Supreme Court about whether it's legal for states that states that aren't offering their own exchanges, where they can offer subsidies for individuals. Well, and again, so that's a legal issue that needs to be settled. But if you think about the early attacks on the Affordable Care Act was, well, this is another intrusion of government into healthcare. Well, we've already had some pretty significant intrusions of government into healthcare, which, you know, we had Medicare, Medicaid, which is a shared responsibility with state and federal government. You have the Veterans Administration, which, of course, has been very much in the news in the last year. You know, they provide health care. So we've already had a government very well entrenched in health care. And so what that tells me is that there's been some decision made, you know, by the electorate, you know, by the representatives in government, that it's important to have government providing some level of health care. If you think that that's important for government to do that, then the Affordable Care Act should not have been any great shake for anybody. Now, if you don't believe that, if you think health care is a service, like any other service that gets provided, then perhaps the Affordable Care Act is something that shouldn't exist. You can also then question, you know, Medicare, Medicaid. You really have to start drawing some boundaries of what you really want government to do. And I don't think the discussion, if you will, in a lot of these topics that get decided in Washington, D.C., kind of go back to that point of, okay, is this something that you think government should provide? And if you think government should provide it, then you have to be willing to pay for it. And when I say willing to pay for it, I mean that's a shared responsibility. It's not that it says, well, we have to target greater taxes on this percentage of the population. I really think that it needs to be a shared responsibility. So until you really have that kind of frank discussion about, you know, what government involvement should be in the lives of people, what do you want them to do, and then understand the ramifications of that. If you've gone and received health care, let's say in Canada, you know, people talk about some of the problems that exist in the health care system in Canada. I come from the country of Panama. In Panama, everyone is entitled to health care. By the same token, you've had the development of what I'll call a two-tier health system, where some people can go to a government hospital, if you will, and receive health care, but then other people with more means, they may go to private clinics. I think you could certainly see that evolve in the United States as well. So, again, just a real frank discussion on, you know, what do you want government to be? Have that, take a piece of paper out and say, okay, this is something the government should provide. This is something that they shouldn't provide. And then when you sum all that up, assign cost to it and see if you're really willing to pay for it. Because I think we've asked government to do a lot, but we haven't been willing to pay for it.
Certainly an interesting conversation and topic. Certainly appreciate your taking the time to be with us here briefly today. Tell our listeners where they can not only find you online to get more information, but also where they can pick up your book.
Well, Escaping Oz, the book Escaping Oz, Navigating the Crisis, which is the new book, can be found at escapingoz.com. You can certainly find links to purchase it there. Obviously, it's available on Amazon and CreateSpace. My business is called Sentinel Consulting. As you mentioned, it's a business restructuring and capital acquisition firm. One of the things when I wrote the book, the first book 4 years ago, banking in this country had changed very, very dramatically. And so it became a lot harder for particularly smaller businesses to acquire capital, and then they find themselves in cash flow problems. So what we try to do in Sentinel Consulting is help them with cash flow issues and help them acquire capital through a different network, if you will, of categorized lenders. So, and that link is sentinelconsulting.biz. So sentinelconsulting.biz for the business restructuring business, and escapingoz.com is a resource for the book.
Well, Jim, once again, thanks for your time, and thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio. All the best to you.
Thanks a lot for having me, Eric.
Our pleasure. We've been speaking with Jim Mosquera, a principal at Sentinel Consulting, a business restructuring and capital acquisition firm. Also the author of the book Escaping Oz, Navigating the Crisis. And once again, the websites of reference is escapingoz.com as well as sentinelconsulting.com. Biz. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Pick up our iPhone or Android mobile app for your mobile listening convenience. And once again, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio here on EPN. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit epodcastnetwork.com. This is the ePodcast Network.